There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Gramling. I am joined once again by Jenny Brentis of the Weekside Podcast. And Jenny, we look at these matchups sometimes. And when it's early in the season, like, remember when the Jaguars knocked off the Colts week one? And it was a surprise, but no one was like, oh my goodness, this is the... But you get late in the year, and you see the win-loss records, and you can really assign more quantitative value to each team. And sometimes you forget that these are two professional football teams playing each other, and the guys on the other side get paid just as much as the guys on the team that maybe is, like, playoff contention. But anyways, that's my long and choppy and sloppy way of saying the Jets beat the Rams, and I guess we're all trying to come to grips with it right now.
That was an unexpected finish. In last week's power rankings, I said that it seemed unlikely the Jets would avoid 0-16 and that their game against the rolling Rams was an inauspicious opportunity. So I certainly look silly, Gary. Perhaps I provided some bulletin board material. Just kidding. But, good for the Jets, maybe not the franchise as a whole, but for the players and the coaches. I remember talking when we did a tanking story last year regarding the Dolphins, Gary. I remember talking to some players who were on the 0-16 team in Cleveland, and the stain that has on your career. You never live that down, is what they say. And so I think just you have some happiness for players and coaches being able to avoid that everlasting stain, being lumped into that 0-16 category that no one wants to be a part of. And there were some remarkable plays that made that happen, including one from a punter.
Yeah, it was. Look, Jets jump out to a 20-3 lead. Ultimately, they stayed on the field. They controlled the ball for 34 minutes. That was the most they've ever done in an Adam Gase game here. But yeah, you're right. Braden Mann, that tackle on it was Simba Webster. The Rams had all this momentum going. It just felt like that game was going to get away. And I'm not sure this necessarily made you feel any differently, because it seemed like the Rams were going to go in and get points one way or another. But Simba Webster, broke through on this punt return, and there was Braden Mann making the tackle at the Jets' 43-yard line to prevent the go-ahead touchdown. And as we know, in the end, keep the Rams from getting on the scoreboard.
But you're right, when it happened, okay, he prevented the touchdown, and that would have been an easy way for the Rams to score, automatically put them ahead. But the Rams had the ball in Jets territory. They were only trailing by 3. It seemed inevitable that they would at least kick a field goal and probably get into the end zone. But that was what was most confounding, I think, Gary, is here is this playoffs-bound team, and they couldn't advance far enough from within the Jets' own territory to win the game or at least push it to overtime.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it's 20-3 at one point in the third quarter. The Rams did get it going. They moved the ball with relative ease in the second half. Quinnen Williams went out with a concussion. Quinnen Williams was an absolute force in this game before he had to leave with a concussion. But Williams was out. Rams were moving the ball with, again, just the way you would have expected them to move it in this game in the second half. They got into 3rd and 4, and I don't want to be the guy who sits here and talks on a podcast like he knows football better than Sean McVay, because that is nowhere near the truth. But you just kind of hated the low percentage throws that Jared Goff attempted on the final two snaps here for the Rams. Mm-hmm. The one had no chance. I mean, that wheel route for Cam Akers coming out of the backfield, that was well defended. It just wasn't going to work out. The last one for Gerald Everett, Marcus May makes a great play on it. The ball is slightly underthrown. It was open. I mean, if the ball gets out there, it's open. It's just not it's not a high percentage play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was plenty of time left on the clock at that point. You didn't have to worry about going to the sidelines or going for the end zone. All you needed was a slant or a crosser. There were a lot of other options there. So it's hard to know exactly what the play design was, but I agree, Gary, both of those plays. Marcus May, as you said, made a fantastic bat away on that last one, but even still, that would be a difficult pass to complete.
Yeah, it's and again, look, if the ball is out 1 yard further and Gerald Everett catches it and goes into the end zone, we're talking this morning about Sean McVay's great call and Jared Goff's great throw to steal this win from the Jets here. But yeah, in the end, look, the Rams defense, which this seemed like one of the biggest unit versus unit mismatches of the season, Rams defense going against Jets offense, they couldn't get off the field, and they needed to stop the Jets from getting 2 first downs on the final drive, and they couldn't. The Jets got them, and that's how it went down. That bat away by Marcus May ended up being the final snap for the Rams offense.
Yeah, it was just an unexpected turn, and it shook up the order in the NFC West for the time being. The Seahawks would be the division champ and would be in that spot in the NFC playoff picture. So it's just unusual to see, a team get tripped up. No one else had lost to the Jets this season. The Rams had been playing well, but clearly they have some issues with the offense to sort out a little bit. And I think the protection up front is one of the reasons that things have gone a little bit awry. Certainly they're missing Whitworth. They just have seemed a little bit off kilter in terms of that.
Yeah, they've 3 of these past 4 games, they've been really bad on third downs, which is kind of a result of not staying ahead of the sticks like they usually do. They were in 3rd and absurdly long a bunch of times in the first half of this game, and that's just kind of the way it played out. The good news for the Rams is essentially they are playing an NFC West title game in Seattle in Week 16, and if they win that, and we saw them handle the Seahawks with relative ease earlier this year, they win that game, we all forget about this one. We've been saying all season, the 2 through 7 seed in the playoffs this year, really not a big difference. There's not a huge home field advantage for anyone, and not to mention the two seed does not get a bye anymore. So not a big deal in the larger picture of things. If they go to Seattle and win, we'll all kind of just, you know, write this one off as a bummer of a week, and then they go into the postseason. Of course, look, the other side of this is the Jets now get knocked out of the top spot for the time being, at least, for the number one pick for the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. Lawrence, who is, again, no one's a sure thing coming out of college and transitioning to the NFL. Lawrence is as close to a sure thing as we've seen. I don't think this is a hot take. He's as close to a sure thing as we've seen since Andrew Luck. It's just very difficult to imagine him not becoming a franchise quarterback. And then, of course, you know, you factor in rookie wage scale and the fact that you'll have him on the cheap deal for 3 years, et cetera, et cetera. The Jets, if they're in that two spot, there are three very good second-tier quarterbacks. Very good is a very backhanded compliment to make about these guys. They'd all be legitimate candidates to go number one overall if Lawrence was not in the draft. That's Ohio State's Justin Fields, BYU's Zach Wilson, and Trey Lance of North Dakota State, who, of course, only played the single game this year, but was very highly regarded coming into the season. So the Jets can settle on one of those guys and have them on the cheap deal for a couple years. They can go back to Darnold and maybe take a Penei Sewell type. I mean, if they had Sewell and Mekhi Becton as their bookend tackles, that's a that is automatically one of the best tandems in the league. And, or, you know, maybe they get a huge offer. Maybe someone falls in love with one of the quarterbacks. But that's my long way of saying they'll get to draft season, they'll get to assess those three quarterbacks, and then they will get to measure them against Sam Darnold and make a decision.
Yeah, it's a much more interesting conversation now. If you're in position to draft Trevor Lawrence, you draft Trevor Lawrence because, as you said, Gary, he's regarded as the surest thing since Luck, and it's a no-brainer decision for a team that would be in a position to draft him. If you can't get Trevor Lawrence, then you do have a lot of different paths to go. And have you seen enough from Darnold late in the season? Do you think that it's worth seeing if you can salvage and supplement other places on the roster as you described? So it becomes suddenly this interesting conversation, whereas for most of the season, we've just been expecting, okay, they'll take Trevor Lawrence, Sam Darnold era is over, and the Jets are, you know, on a different path now.
The Bengals are sweating out a little bit too, because they were penciling Sewell as the best non-quarterback in this draft and exactly the type of guy they needed with the three pick, and now all of a sudden that that's maybe not locked in as much as we thought. But I don't know. There are a lot of, like, you know, well, they still have to take a quarterback. Well, they can take a quarterback. Well, they have to figure out if they like the quarterbacks or not. I mean, they're all individuals. It's not just pencil in a quarterback like it's fantasy football. It's, do you like one of the quarterbacks? And if so, take him. And if you don't like him, stick with Darnold. That's the way it plays out in the end. Let's go to the other side of the standings here. This is the Chiefs-Saints matchup, which was sort of the marquee matchup, which I don't know, it just sort of, our minds were blown by the Jets upset, which happened so early in that 4 o'clock window. And it was kind of like we were all like in a daze watching the end of Chiefs Saints here. But this was a difficult game for Patrick Mahomes, who really got knocked around in this one. And that's kind of been something, I feel like we've seen it more this year than in past years, where Mahomes has just had some games where he is just under heavy, heavy heat here, and it's working. But I don't know. I don't know if you necessarily say, like, well, you worry about it, but you do kind of worry. Are they going to get to January and get a, you know, maybe they get a Steelers team and that pass rush that sort of takes over a game, which is what we've seen happen to the Chiefs. You can count it on one hand, but you've seen it happen to this Chiefs offense a few times over the last three seasons.
Yeah, and you see Mahomes make plays to escape that heavy pressure at times, but there are situations where you just can't escape. The pressure gets there too quickly, and the line, as you mentioned, Gary, has been an issue the last few weeks, and I think that does cast some concern. I mean, the Chiefs are still winning games, so they're finding ways to overcome that, but if you get into a matchup where suddenly you can't rely on Mahomes to make magic on every single play, then maybe their outlook is not so rosy.
Yeah, and it's for the Saints side of this, I mean, their defense, I think, played as well as you could have expected in this game. It's a really good defense. I thought they matched up with the Chiefs very well when it was all said and done. Drew Brees in his first game back from the thumb injury, though, it was just kind of all out of sync here for the Saints offense. And again, no Michael Thomas in this one. We've seen Brees play without Michael Thomas this year, and they've been fine. They've been averaging almost 30 points a game without Thomas and with Brees in the lineup this year. But this was, again, you know, one for 11 on third down. I mean, that's just not going to get it done against the Chiefs here, no matter how good your defense plays.
Yeah, Brees just looked a little bit uncomfortable or unsure of himself in several situations. And the Saints certainly made the right decision to sit Michael Thomas for the rest of the regular season, hoping he gets, they put him on IR, so he has to miss three games. Hopefully he gets healthy for the playoffs is what their projection is, and that's the right thing. But you can see the short-term impact. Yes, Brees has played well without Michael Thomas, but I do think when he's coming off of an injury and he's a little bit off, that's when it really does help to have a receiver like Michael Thomas who knows him so well, but who also has the ability to kind of make spectacular plays to sort of maybe offset that slight margin of error that Brees is showing. So I think that showed up, but they still made it interesting down the stretch. And you do wonder if Cam Jordan didn't get ejected, how would things have played out?
Yeah, that was a soft ejection for Cam Jordan. That was tough.
I watched it several times. I think you could, the replay angle was not great. I did think on the one angle you could see that he closed the fist. And depending on what view they had of that, they probably were thinking, okay, there's a closed fist and that's an immediate ejection. But I agree, Gary, it wasn't something that happened like after the play. It was while being engaged with the lineman, which is like, you know, part of his job. So
Yeah. I'll keep an open mind about it, but that was tough. That's a tough way to lose your defensive player of the year caliber pass rusher there. But you're right. Look, very good drive to wrap this one up here for the Saints. Maybe you build off that a little bit going forward, a little bit of optimism going to the next game. This number one seed for them in the NFC, and again, that 2 through 7, it's a jumble, and it's no one really has an edge over anyone when it comes to that seeding. They're probably going to be in that. You know, Packers. Does anyone ever say magic number in NFL terms?
I guess like the magic number is 11 wins or something like that.
No, like baseball. So in baseball, it's always like, you know, if your magic number is 5, it's like a combination of 5 wins of yours or win your wins plus the team chasing you's losses. That's the worst phrasing it could possibly be. But when that combines to 5, you clinch that spot. So, in other words, like the Saints' magic number is 1 right now. Excuse me, the Packers' magic number is 1 right now in the race for the number one seed. If they win one more game or the Saints lose one more game, then the Packers clinch. That was the worst description of magic number you could possibly have, but there you go.
I like it. It was a little clunky, but the point got across.
A little clunky is a very nice way of putting it, Jenny. I thank you for that. But yes, the long story short is the Packers are on the verge of clinching. If they win one more game or if the Saints lose one more game, that oh-so-valuable number one seed in the NFC. So Saints have some work to do in January now. All right, hang on 1 second, Jenny, because it is time for the SI Fantasy segment presented by DraftKings. As always, every Monday, we are joined by Michael Fabiano of SI.com/fantasy and the SI Fantasy Podcast. And Fabs, we are going into championship week for most leagues, and I imagine those of you who got to face people who maybe picked up and started Jared Goff are feeling pretty good on Monday.
Jared Goff's a bum. He's a bum. I hate Jared Goff, right? Not as a human being. I'm sure he's great. I said it in the preseason that didn't exist. He was the player that I disliked the most because he's Jared Goff. He had that one big year, and outside of that, he's been mediocre. When you're at home against the Jets, this team hadn't won a game all year. All year. A lot of people think, well, they're tanking for Trevor at home. You're the freaking Rams. You're contending for your division title. You're going to the playoffs. and you lay down and show your belly to the freaking Jets. How do you score 15 points against the Jets? I mean, honestly,
Goff, so many 3rd and 23s in that game.
I had Goff as my QB 12. So in the 12-team league, I advise people to start him. And I hate Goff. I hate him. And against my better judgment, I said it's the Jets. Goff, you stink. You are awful, okay? I mean, how bad do you have to be? You got held to 209 yards through the air by the Jets. Mm. You're an embarrassment. Mm. Oh, my goodness gracious. And it wasn't just him. Cooper Kupp, what the hell was that? Jeez, at least if you had Robert Woods or Tyler Higbee, you know, or Cam Akers, okay, you know. And what about the Rams' defense? There was not a better play ever among fantasy defenses in this year than the Rams at home against the J-E-T-S. And they scored 3 points.
Couldn't get a stop. Could not
what
get a stop.
What the hell was that? That's bad coaching. Sean McVay should be ashamed of himself. I'm sure he is. But this is why. Never again. Never. I will never. I don't care who he's playing. I will never. He's playing Seattle this week. They suck against. I don't care. I will never tell anybody to draft or start Jared Goff again. Never. It's not going to happen ever. Nope. Not doing it. Don't care.
Man.
Don't. If he has three huge games in a row, it does. I'm saying sit him. I don't care. Screw Jared Goff. Well, sorry, I know it's the holiday season, but he was the goddarn Grinch, man.
That is your holiday card was very profane having to do with Jared Goff this year.
He's not getting anything. I wouldn't even get that guy a fruitcake.
Well, let's start with the quarterbacks. Look, plenty of teams out there stream quarterbacks.
A lot of good ones too, man.
If you're looking at Week 16, you're in the championship. What are you looking at here?
I said Jalen Hurts last week. Pick him up. He went. He had those 38 points against Arizona. Right? Remember I was saying, I was like, this is going to be a fun matchup between him and Kyler? It was, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolute fantasy bonanza. Hurts has scored almost 60 points in his last two games, his first two NFL starts. He's got the Cowboys coming up next. Why do the Cowboys keep winning games? Stop! I want a high draft pick. I don't want it. I don't want this. I think we got the Eagles, and I think we got the Giants the next two games. So, right? So, I mean, whatever, dude.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit bummed out that we won that game, but I mean, whatever. It is what it is. Hurts is a very good ad. Tua Tagovailoa, how can you like the matchup last week? And through the air, he did nothing. He had 145 yards, but he rushed for two touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's big. Now he's got the Raiders. The Raiders stink. Their defense is terrible at home, especially. They've been giving it up to quarterbacks at home. I mean, look at Herbert last week. So Tua is worth an ad. Baker Mayfield. Now, Baker, he had been hard to trust earlier on in the season. He hadn't been a good quarterback from a fantasy perspective. Last four games, 11 total touchdowns, 20-plus points three times, and he's got the Jets this week. Baker could be a top 12 play. Mitchell Trubisky also has got the Jaguars this week. And then Marcus Mariota, the matchup's not great against Miami, but in two QB and Superflex leagues, I mean, he's certainly worth a look.
All right, how about the... How about the running backs here? Anyone out there?
There are. Now, Le'Veon Bell's available in about 40%+ of leagues on ESPN and about 50 on Yahoo. If you're in a competitive league, he might not be out there. But look, like when I looked at the ownership percentages, I was like, ooh, wow. He's available in a bunch of leagues. He had 14.6 points against the Saints, which is pretty good because the Saints defense is really good against the run. And the Clyde Edwards-Helaire is out for the rest of the regular season.
Yeah.
So Bell's got the Falcons coming up, which is not the best matchup in the world, but they just gave up two touchdowns to Leonard Fournette. So Bell is on, and then Tony Pollard. I told you, I said a month and a half ago, Tony Pollard's going to make an impact at some point, and just in time. And if I'm the Cowboys, well, if I'm a fantasy manager, please put Zeke on IR. Please, just put him. Please, Tony Pollard's a better back right now. He is. He's a better back. Explosive. I mean, the guy went bananas. He had 132 yards and two touchdowns. That was better. That was a better performance than Zeke's had in a long time. To keep him out. Cowboys, keep Zeke out. I don't care how much you're paying him. Rest him up for next year. He'll be good next year. And right now, don't do it. Keep him off the field. Salvan Ahmed, huge game, 127 yards, over 21 fantasy points against the Patriots. He played 43 snaps. So if Myles Gaskin remains on the COVID-19 list, Ahmed's got the Raiders coming up next. It's a hell of a matchup. Jeff Wilson Jr., who we told you to pick up last week, he had a pretty good game. I mean, Raheem Mostert can't stay healthy. And Sony Michel is also worth an add, assuming Damian Harris is out. He's got the Bills next week. Kind of an unexciting, you know, like he's not very inspiring, but I mean, it's week 16, folks.
How about the receiver group here?
Yeah, we got some good ones, right? So Russell Gage, who's available all over the place. He had 10 targets, almost 18 points against the Bucs. He has scored 35-plus combined points in his last two games. And as long as Julio is out, Gage is worth a look, and they've got Kansas City coming up next. Emmanuel Sanders, right? He didn't have a huge stat line, but he had 5 targets, almost 12 points against the Chiefs. And Michael Thomas is on injured reserve. So Sanders is the number one wide receiver now, and Drew Brees is back. And Brees was, I mean, he didn't look great. He still had a good fantasy game, right? That's one thing I've learned. Don't doubt Drew Brees. And Sanders and the Saints have the Vikings, and their pass defense is garbage. Mm. Kiki QT, I've been talking about him for a couple of weeks. He's still available in a lot of leagues. 19 targets. He's averaged over 15 points since week 13. He's got the Bengals coming up, and they stink. Some other guys, Tyron Johnson. I don't know if Keenan Allen's going to play. Damn you, Keenan Allen. But Tyron has had 2 good games in a row. Rashard Higgins for the Browns, Greg Ward for the Eagles, and in some deeper leagues, maybe Darnell Mooney against Jacksonville this week.
All right. And we talk about it every week, even though we don't like to. Tight ends. Anything out there for tight ends?
It's wicked thin. Okay. The guys that I'm going to suggest are 50% owned or less. Logan Thomas. I was wrong about Thomas last week. Seattle had been really good against tight ends. Thomas had 13 targets, 101 yards, over 23 points. He's got 31 targets, and he's averaged 19 points since week 13. He's got the Panthers next. So, I mean, geez Louise, that's the Ron Rivera revenge game, by the way. Then Tyler Higbee, who I said last week, he's a good streamer. Jets, he was one of the Rams who actually helped you, right? He had over 16 points. He's scored 12-plus in 2 of his last 3. He's got the Seahawks coming up next. And then Austin Hooper had a nice game against the Giants. Now, Cleveland goes back to New York to face the Jets, and they're the worst team in the league against tight ends. So Austin Hooper, he's out there in about 50% of leagues.
Yeah.
And then if you're looking deep, Tyler Eifert, who has been involved in a lot of fantasy football team names, you know, and you know the joke, right?
can you say it? Is it clean? Are we going to lose our clean rating?
It's clean. It's clean. Okay. One year, one of my teams was called "It Hurts When Eifert."
Okay. All right. Yeah.
You know, I'm good with that. That's a good one, man.
I'm going to allow it. Yep. Yep.
He's got the Bears, and they are terrible against tight ends. Who's Tyler Conklin, by the way? Whoever he is, he had a good game, and Irv Smith Jr. dropped a touchdown, but whatever. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. So Tyler Eifert. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's a good matchup against Chicago. By the way, Tyler Bass.
Mm-hmm.
Big game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Younghoe Koo. Big game. Greg Zuerlein. Big game. Just saying. Kickers.
Younghoe Koo has it perfect from 50. Perfect from 50 plus this year. Pretty good.
Freaking beast, man. He's a beast. That guy's been, he's been very good. Very good.
This show took a very sophomoric turn. I'm glad. It's the time of the season to get your Tyler Eifert jokes out there, right, which it opened my mind.
And a crap on Goff.
Yes.
Well, and I'll tell you something else. I'm going to do it. My SiriusXM show tonight, SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, 8 Eastern, me and Mike Dempsey on Monday. I am going to go off on Jared Goff. I've got a rant in me, man. I started it a little bit this morning. It's like 7 o'clock on the left coast. It's going to be fun. And we'll also have fun with the Jets too, because only the New York Jets, when they win, they lose. Do you think that Shad Khan has gone into the gone into the coaching staff and the players and said, hey, folks, listen, you guys play football, make a lot of money. Let's not give maximum effort the last 2 weeks.
I was going to say, and look back at them, they'll look back and be like, yeah, remember when we almost made the Super Bowl in 2017 and now nobody's here anymore? Like, you don't worry about it.
You want the stadium to be full next year? It's that time again. It's just, you're good. Mm. You're good. It's all good. You're still going to get paid. You know, not maximum effort. It's all good.
Bring in Greg Williams to consult on the 2-minute defense, and we'll be good.
Imagine that. The Jets who were lined up to have the franchise quarter, and they've had several guys that they thought could be, like Darnold, like Sanchez. Mm-hmm. You don't make USC quarterbacks your franchise quarterback. They typically don't pan out. But this kid's, I mean, geez Louise, he's good. And now the Jets likely aren't going to get him. They'll probably keep Darnold. They'll pick up his fifth-year option. They'll suck again, and the Jaguars will start ascending in the AFC. I wonder if the NFL could put Jacksonville Jets on the schedule next year, assuming the Jags get Trevor Lawrence. That would be freaking
hilarious.
They've
got to. No, they'll definitely play because they'll both be last place. So
I
don't even know what the division rotation is, but they'll play head-to-head.
Oh, dude. That's going to be great. Yeah. Trevor Lawrence goes into the MetLife Stadium against Sam Darnold and just lights the Jets on fire. Oh, God, that's going to be so funny.
It's one to circle on the schedule.
One to circle on the schedule. Jets-Jaguars 2021.
Oh, man. All right. Thabs, everyone out there, say a prayer for Jared Goff. It's a holiday season for him too.
He's the Grinch, man. He's the Grinch, dude.
But listen.
Pull in your stocking.
I want to make a couple things clear here. Thabs, you're going to be back for week 17. For the weirdos out there who do week 17 leagues or week 17 championships or whatever it might be. But you'll also be here through Super Bowl. We're going to have a playoff stuff. I play in playoff leagues. That's when my leagues do their postseason. So still plenty of stuff to talk about here in the SI Fantasy segment presented by DraftKings. As always, Michael Fabiano, catch him on the SI Fantasy Podcast. Catch him at si.com/fantasy. Fabs, have a wonderful Christmas here, and we'll talk to you next week.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, everybody out there. It's been a pleasure being on and looking forward to keeping fantasy football alive after most people have already stopped playing. Hey, man, that's why we have DFS and we have playoff games.
Plenty to do in January.
That's right.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because he didn't need it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? You got rain gear, but you can't overlook sunny day gear. A Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie has you covered on the sunniest days. Like, literally. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad-spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50. And it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. Columbia PFG has you covered with their Castback TC shoe. Its OmniMax cushioning and traction system helps if you're on your feet a lot, say, fighting a fish. Not to mention keeping you sure-footed on a wet rocking boat. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all their performance fishing gear.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
All right, we welcome back Jenny Vrentis, and Jenny, we're getting into the really getting into the guts of this playoff race here in the NFC, which is kind of delightful. I don't know, it's not good, but it's certainly competitive. And we'll start out in Arizona for the Cardinals Eagles, and this one ended up being this was an all out shootout. This was some fun football here. The two former Oklahoma quarterbacks going head to head. Cardinals jump out to a 16-0 lead, and it looked like, okay, well, maybe this is just going to be a blowout. Maybe the Cardinals will just outclass Jalen Hurts and the Eagles in this one. Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins were clicking for they've been clicking all year, but it was especially impressive in this game. But I guess kind of the story of this one ended up being Jalen Hurts takes another step, and the Eagles were right there in the end.
Yeah, I was impressed by Hurts' play. He led the team back from a deficit. There were a lot of plays that you thought might go nowhere, but he made something happen. And, you know, I heard some comments like, well, all of a sudden the other players around him are playing better. But I do think there's something to when a player like Hurts is in there bringing a spark to the team that kind of elevates the level of the rest of the offense. And I think you're seeing that.
I we'll get into Wentz in a little bit. But I mean, look, you just kind of get the sense that the other Eagles players, based on their comments and based on their play, maybe are just enjoying this run a little bit more with Jalen Hurts than they were with Wentz. And again, you know, winning a game and being competitive in another game certainly helps that out and all that. But this is turning into, you know, we talked about it last week and it was kind of like, well, if you were to end the season right now and head into, you know, next summer, you'd probably have a pretty legitimate quarterback competition here. And I don't, if Hurts strings together two more games like this, I don't even know if there's a quarterback competition. I think it's just time to talk to Carson Wentz about restructuring his deal so you can trade him somewhere else if he doesn't want to be a backup, and going from there. And that's kind of how it plays out. I will say the two warning flags I sort of put up here is, number one, look, the Eagles were playing from behind for most of this game. I always, you know, people get worked up over sort of the cumulative stats when it comes to that. And, you know, you do put up numbers when your team is playing from behind. You have to play quickly. You have to throw it a lot. 50-something dropbacks for Hurts in this game. So it was a game that was made to put up numbers. But, the quality was there, too. He sailed a couple of passes that could have turned into interceptions and didn't. And if, you know, if that happens and maybe this game ends up being a 28-0 type of game in the first quarter, then things play out differently. But again, the actual performance was good. Alshon Jeffrey, I don't know what was going on with the Cardinals defensive backs that they couldn't cover Alshon Jeffrey, but they couldn't cover Alshon Jeffrey. And it felt like 2014 again.
Yeah, and I thought there were some issues in the Cardinals secondary that Aqib Talib on the broadcast did a really good job of pointing out. He would diagnose the coverage and say they were supposed to be in trail on that. They were supposed to be under the receiver. And, you know, it's hard for anyone from the outside watching to determine the defensive play call. But I think Aqib Talib has as good insight into that as anyone, having played for as long as he did. And it just seemed like there were some situations in which the way the Cardinals defensive backs were playing gave a distinct advantage to the Eagles receivers. And in many cases, the Eagles took advantage of that.
So the Cardinals sitting at what are they now? 8-6
Is that where we are?
8-6 right now. So they are in that 7 seed in the NFC, and right now they are trying to hold off the red hot Chicago Bears. The Mitchell Trubisky revival tour continues. And look, we talked about this, I think, after that first start back when he lost to the Packers. And we kind of wondered, like, you know, down the line in a couple of years, if you had Trubisky in one of these highly schemed offenses like you see in Cleveland or Tennessee or Minnesota, and, you know, could he be one of those guys? Could he be a Kirk Cousins or maybe even a Ryan Tannehill type guy later in his career? And the offense that the Bears have run out the last couple weeks has trended more and more into that style. And it was, I mean, if you were to, I don't know, if you were colorblind or something or couldn't tell which team was which, the Bears offense looked almost exactly like the Vikings offense in this game. It looked like a Gary Kubiak, Kevin Stefanski type attack they were going with, and it was extremely effective.
Yeah, so here you kind of get into the situation where you didn't have confidence in Trubisky heading into the season. You went out and get Foles. Then you go back to Trubisky, and he's playing better down the stretch. So does this change your ultimate evaluation of him in the long term? And similar to kind of what we're saying with Darnold, too, like, how much should you weigh some good games down the stretch against opponents that have pretty decent defenses?
It's fun. It's like, so Caitlin Kaler, our former colleague who's now Bleacher Report, we were texting about this a little bit last night, and she was like, I think Trubisky's come back to Chicago, and just knee-jerk reaction is just like, no, it's over. It can't happen again. But I don't know, the alternatives aren't probably great for the Bears right now. You could certainly get Trubisky on a, you know, they declined the fifth-year option. I don't know if there's going to be a huge market for Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, I shouldn't say I don't know. There will not be a huge market for Mitchell Trubisky, so you could get him on the cheap. You saw the type of deals that, you know, Marcus Mariota signed or Jameis Winston signed. If you get him on a deal like that, maybe it's something that works out. I think ultimately when you step back, and look, this was a game where David Montgomery was great. This might have been his best game of his career so far. He had 32 carries for 146. If you get into these scenarios where you get a lead and you can protect a lead and you stay ahead of the sticks and that play action stays in it, they ran, ESPN Stats and Info had the number, 62% of Trubisky's dropbacks were play action, which is the highest rate of any team ever, according to ESPN Stats and Info. When you can do that constantly, it's fine. The question is, okay, what happens in these scenarios where you're down 14-0 in the second quarter, or you know, a day where the run game just doesn't get it going, and you end up in a bunch of 3rd-and-8 scenarios where play action is no longer a factor? Then you run into some problems.
Right, and just kind of looking at the situation for the Bears in 2021, they're committed to Foles in 2021. They gave up a lot to get him. And so
that is true.
Maybe they're Trubisky, of their limited options to have another quarterback in addition to Foles, Trubisky may be the best of their limited options, Gary.
Boy, that is something. It really is. Good for him. And look, I honestly, I thought Trubisky would get another shot at some point down the line. I just thought it'd be like 3 or 4 years from now after serving as a backup for a while and maybe be a bridge guy somewhere. But maybe he gets another crack at this thing. I don't know if...
In Chicago.
I don't know how Bears fans feel about that. I will say this. We all wrote off the Bears a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They have now won 2 straight. They have the tiebreaker with the Cardinals. So they are essentially one game out of the playoffs. If they end up getting that game of the Cardinals, they'll be in. And the Bears get Jacksonville next week. They go to Jacksonville. They get the Packers week 17. The Packers can clinch the number one seed in week 16. So the Packers might be starting Tim Boyle in that week 17 game. So you feel suddenly pretty good about the Bears winning out here and getting to 9-7. And then the Cardinals, they host the 49ers, and then they go to L.A. to play the Rams. And that might be a must-win for the Rams as far as winning the NFC West and hosting a playoff game and all that. So, you know, again, if the Packers get knocked off by the Titans next week and have to win week 17, that changes a lot of that calculus. But there's a very realistic scenario of the Bears grabbing the seventh seed in the NFC after all that, after this roller coaster of a year.
What a time, Gary.
Really is. It really is. And we haven't even gotten to the NFC East race.
Oh, boy.
We'll start with the Sunday nighter, and look, the flexed in Sunday night game. I think the NBC folks were maybe hoping for a little more Daniel Jones, a little less Colt McCoy in this matchup here. But you know, the Browns offense stays hot in this one. Baker Mayfield, another impressive performance. He's had a really good December after that sort of rain-soaked November he had to play through. So the Browns are doing it offensively, and the Giants just really didn't have the ability to keep up in this one.
Yeah, and certainly they tried. You could maybe understand some of the risks that they took early on, saying, okay, we don't have our starting quarterback, you know, from the first kick return, right? You could tell that they were going to be, I don't know how they schemed up that first kick return, but it was a very good kick return. Mm-hmm. And it made me think, like, Joe Judge probably had some, just made me think of the old Jets days where Mike Westhoff would be like, I schemed up Miami left and this is going to be a big return for Brad Smith. Okay. So you open up with a big return. Then they have a fourth down. Instead of going for the field goal, they try the fake. But I do think sometimes you try too hard, right? You try to overcompensate too much and you say, we know we're going to have to score a lot of points, so let's try all of these things. But at the same time, you get out of what might be the most successful thing to do in that situation. So if they had just kicked those two field goals instead of going for the fake and then going for it in the second fourth down in the red zone, the game would have looked a little bit different. I mean, I still think the Browns would have run away with it, but the deficit is a little bit less. You know, maybe there's a different energy. There's a different dynamic to the game. I just think when you try so hard to overcompensate for a deficit, sometimes you get yourself out of what might be the best approach to win the game.
I do want to, and I agree with you fully. I do want to, though, compliment that fake field goal design, because there's nothing better than the center becoming an eligible receiver. so it's like touch football in the backyard where the guy snaps the ball and then goes out for a pass. They shifted in a way that made Nick Gates the center eligible. The issue, though, was I feel like they didn't really use a whole lot of sleight of hand to sort of sneak the center out. It's kind of like he just ran straight out into the middle of the defense, and you know, it causes confusion. But if you are back there on defense and a dude is, like, you know, standing right next to you, it's not like you're not like looking at his number and being like, well, is he eligible? Do I have to cover him or not? Like, once he's out there, it's like you're covering him. There's no sort of, okay, he snaps the ball and then there's like a beat or two and then he sneaks out. It was, I don't know. I love the way they got to that, but then sort of the execution where he just, again, he just runs in the middle of the defense and a bunch of dudes are like, oh, okay, you're a receiver, I guess.
Yeah, execution fell short in a lot of ways for the Giants.
So Giants, Giants dropped this one. There's still a game out in the NFC East as the football team, they host Seattle, and this was one where they kind of were around in the end. Seahawks took a 17-0 lead in this one, and again, you know, stylistically, this is the way Washington is built to compete. They want to play these sort of ugly, low-scoring games, and this is another one. You know, 35 total points in this one. Dwayne Haskins got the start in this one, and look, Dwayne Haskins, just stylistically, he played like Alex Smith, and I guess it's a question of, I don't know. I think you can get more out of Dwayne Haskins. I was kind of bummed out to see him just checking down frequently in this one. Mm-hmm. And I know some folks were, I think Jonathan Vilma was doing this game and he was kind of like, you know, good, he's checking out and checking out. And it's like, well, when you're down 17 points, you gotta at some point not check down anymore.
Right. I was thinking while watching this game too, at this point, which of these teams do you want to see in the playoffs? And a few weeks ago, I was excited about seeing the way the Washington defense would match up perhaps with an NFC opponent. But now I really just kind of want to see Jalen Hurts in the playoffs. I mean, yeah. Obviously the loss to the Cardinals was a blow, but you know, the Washington football team offense is not very exciting to watch. So you're really hoping that there is some kind of interesting defensive, you know, intrigue that they create against the opponents. Other than that, there's not a lot of excitement.
It's fun when the defense scores multiple touchdowns.
Right. Yeah.
And if they don't do that, it's not fun at all. Dwayne Haskins threw two interceptions in this game. One was a bad interception. The other one was sort of a deflected pass that got picked off. And I know a lot of people are circling that and saying, well, this was the first multi-turnover game in forever. Look, Alex Smith threw a couple of ugly interceptions during the stretch. The one weird thing with Washington and that has sort of kept their giveaway total down is they haven't lost a fumble in 5 weeks, which is just sort of a weird thing. So I don't want to get too into, you know, like, oh, Haskins didn't take care of the ball. Like, yeah, on one throw he didn't. But you've seen that from Alex Smith as well in these other games. And that's the way it goes sometimes, especially when you're trailing. But that's a long way of saying, I don't know. They don't try to score points. And that's a problem when you fall behind.
Yeah, it's a problem to close deficits. And like you said, unless the defense scores touchdowns, it's more difficult to make keep things interesting.
So we have the Seahawks hosting the Rams next week in what is sort of a de facto NFC West title game. As far as Washington goes, they are a game ahead of the Giants. The Giants own the tiebreaker there. Washington will host Carolina. Ron Rivera, revenge game here. And then they go to Philadelphia, Jalen Hurts in week 17. The Giants will go to Baltimore. And then they will host Dallas to wrap up the season. And if the Giants are going to catch Washington, they have to make up a game there some way. So let's go down to Miami, where the Patriots, they're out. It's over for them. They are out of the playoffs. They will not play in the postseason for the first time since the 1940s or so. The Dolphins had like no wide receivers in this game. Devontae Parker ended up tweaking his hamstring, did not play in this game. Jakeem Grant was out, no Preston Williams, etc. So they just end up running the ball. They ran it down the Patriots' throat, 250 yards, over 37 minutes of possession. The Patriots had not allowed this many rushing yards since 2013. So we'll start with the good side of it. The Dolphins found a way in this one with such a shortage of weapons.
Yeah, and they stay in good position to earn a playoff bid, a wild card bid. You know, it was not always a pretty game, but it was a good game plan against the Patriots. And, you know, a big win for Brian Flores against his former mentor.
Yeah, and this was they went out to Foxborough and upset the Patriots in Week 17 last year. They get them late in the season this year. As far as the Patriots go, again, they allow 250 on the ground, which you just, you know, you would not expect to happen to a Bill Belichick defense here. So they, I think it's sort of safe to say at this point, Cam Newton is not a long-term solution at quarterback. Maybe he ends up being a bridge guy if they feel they can develop Stidham or if they can get their hands on a quarterback this offseason. But beyond quarterback, which is for obvious reasons what we focus on so much, they have some issues defensively here, and they also have a lack of passing game weapons on offense, but they have some defensive issues here. You know, Dante Hightower is coming back, but Kyle Van Noy is not. And you know, all these other guys, Jamie Collins, these guys who are sort of key members of that linebacking core are not coming back. You have an aging secondary. I mean, they have some things to address on that side of the ball as well.
I still think back to the fact that reportedly, or Albert Breer reported, that the Patriots were investigating, shopping around Stephon Gilmore before the season. And that should have been the signal. That should have been the sign that Belichick knew they weren't going to be that good this season and was just kind of punting on the year. You never punt on a year, obviously. You play all 16 games. Players want to win. You do not want anyone to get injured, all of those things. But the fact that they were considering reportedly trading Gilmore before the season started indicated that he knew they weren't going to be that good. And maybe you thought, okay, Cam Newton, there's some potential there. Let's see if this could be a long-term solution. And that didn't work out the best possible way, right? You know, there's a range of potential outcomes, and it was not the highest potential outcome of that acquisition. But overall, you probably looked at the roster, looked at the opt-outs, looked at the years of draft picks, some of which did not work out, and said, we're going to need a rebuild. But the question is now, to your point, Gary, even when they get some of these pieces back next year, and they still have to address the quarterback situation in 2021. And, you know, the aging secondary, how much of a rebuild do they need and how long will that take? And there's up and coming teams in the rest of the division too. We see the Bills win the division title for the first time since the 90s. The Dolphins are coming together. They've got a lot of really good pieces that indicate that this could be an interesting team for years to come. So it's a position that we didn't expect to see the Patriots in at this point.
No, and you like the coaching staff, and you are optimistic that they can maybe turn it around faster than you'd expect. But they have some major questions to address this offseason. Stephon Gilmore, by the way, injured in this game. It sounds like he's out for the year, though. It looked like he hit a bad patch of turf, and it sort of came out from him. Maybe a more minor knee injury. It seems to be less serious than they first thought, but Gilmore is, you know, he's 30. This seemed to be sort of a contract year for him, and we'll see what's next for him. And you know, whether it's New England or somewhere else, he's one of the fascinating guys to keep an eye on this upcoming offseason. Let's go down to Atlanta, where Tom Brady gets a deficit against the Falcons and then comes back and wins the game. And that was kind of the story in this one. It was just very on the nose. I don't know what to say about it. Brady throws for 390 in this one. I mean, look, the Bucks at halftime, they looked terrible in the first half, mm-hmm. and it looked like it was going to be another long week for the offense. Brady ends up throwing for 390. That's the most he's thrown for since the Super Bowl 52 loss to the Eagles. So I don't know. Is this now the Bucks are good now offensively? We've seen them. They carved up the Panthers a couple weeks ago, and then they had a couple of rough weeks. Now they carve up the Falcons. They get to play Detroit and the Falcons in week 16 and 17. So you figure that's, I don't know, a nice tune-up going into the postseason?
That's true, Gary. It's hard to know exactly what to make of where they're at. You don't want to make too much out of a slow start. The important thing for the Bucks is that they overcame it. They found a way to get back into the game with a fantastic second half. But you also don't want to put too much weight into that performance either, because the Falcons are a team that all season has let opponents back in the second half. So I'm not sure what to make of the Bucks. I don't think they're the dominant team that we thought they might be at some points this season. They've definitely wavered from that, and they've shown some cracks, but you're right. They have a good final stretch to get into position for the playoffs. And, you know, they're certainly going to be a tough opponent in the playoffs. And the NFC picture is muddled, so perhaps there is an opportunity for them there.
Let's go out to Baltimore, where the Ravens just smashed the Jaguars. This game was it was not a competitive game, but the Ravens are another team we wondered about. I've been bullish on the Ravens and thought they were playing better than their record would indicate. They could get to 11-5. They're probably going to get to 11-5. They host the Giants, and then they go to Cincinnati week 17, and they still need help to get into the postseason. It's just kind of funny. Look, they might finish 11-5 as one of the best teams in the NFL, and even in a year of playoff expansion, they might still miss the postseason.
So what you're saying, Gary, is that in this case, 11 might not be the magic number for the Ravens. This is a different usage of magic number. This is the magic number that I thought you meant early on.
But and somehow, despite my flawless explanation, perhaps you did not pick up on what the magic number actually is.
The magic number is 4. No, 3. 3. I'm sorry. I'm getting tested with my math on the spot. They need 2 wins.
Oh, yeah.
They need 2 wins and then a loss from someone else. So the magic number is 3. So they can't get to 3 by themselves. I don't know, Gary.
I don't know if that counts as a magic number if you can't do it on your own.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
But that is the correct concept. They need 3. A combination of wins or losses by the teams they're competing with.
Yeah. I mean, I just really would like to see the Ravens in the playoffs. I am with you, Gary. You know, they had a rough stretch with COVID cases, which is a strange thing to be saying. I just want to acknowledge that we're talking about COVID cases in the context of someone's playoff chances. So that's just a weird sentence, and I don't really like how that sounds. Mm-hmm. But they did have a rough stretch, and I think if they were to get into the playoffs, they would be a team that people would not want to play.
Yeah, that's it's going to be funny watching the seeding situation in the AFC and see how. I mean, look, I would not want to play Baltimore or Indianapolis, who is probably going to be playing a first round road game, and we'll see who ends up drawing them, because it's probably going to be one of the 2 or 3 seed, like a Pittsburgh or a Buffalo type. Yeah, as far as the Ravens, so they need a loss. They need to win those last 2 games. They need a loss to come from the Colts, who play at Pittsburgh and host the Jaguars, the Dolphins, who go to Vegas and go to Buffalo, or the Browns, who host the Jets and then, go to play the Jets on the road and then host the Steelers. So that's how it goes. And I am sure you guys will cover some of this on the Weak Side podcast, but I do disagree with Connor Orr that the Jaguars are a better landing spot for Trevor Lawrence than the Jets were. I think Jacksonville is the nightmare scenario for a young quarterback based on their roster building and player not so friendly approach to the last couple of seasons here. But
I rarely disagree with Connor, but I do in this case and agree with you, Gary.
Yeah. Yep. Let's talk about the Colts, and well, more than that, let's talk about the Texans a little bit in this game, who for the second time in 3 weeks get to within 2 yards of well, in this case, tying the Colts, and watch it slip away and lose it on a mishap at the goal line.
That was brutal, and you could see the camera zoomed in on Deshaun Watson watching the replay on the big screen, and just like the bewilderment in his face, because from his point of view where he was on the field, it looked like it was a clear touchdown. I mean, from the viewer's point of view, it looked like it was a clear touchdown, and that was a just remarkable defensive play to punch the ball out and save the game there.
I know. I always wonder, like, okay, how much of a skill is that? You did the piece on TJ Watt and how he sort of has honed that, but mm-hmm. I mean, look, Darius Leonard is you know, one of the top 3. You could probably argue even the best linebacker in football right now. And the fact that it's Darius Leonard is the guy making that play, just making, you know, we sort of chalk up these fumbles to sort of like these bad luck types of things. But I don't know, when the best players are always the ones doing them, maybe there's a little more skill than you would think.
I mean, I think that's true, Gary. You can practice it. I mean, TJ Watt says he would spend a period in practice every week trying this. You know, he would practice punching out the ball so often in practice that the running backs would get annoyed because, as his position coach said, he would get some other balls. So, you know, he would punch too often in practice, cause a little bit discomfort for his own teammates. And I do think there's something to studying which players are more vulnerable to it or how to time it, but there is still an element of luck. Even if you study how to time it, even if you study which, you know, approach to take, even if you study, you know, when a player is most vulnerable, you still have to, a lot of things have to line up to be able to get the ball out, which is why it doesn't happen all that often.
And the Titans on the other side of this AFC South race, they were up 46 points and beat the hapless Lions here. If you are into the Derrick Henry 2,000-yard watch here, he is 321 shy. He is at 340 touches. That includes some pass catches here at this point. So that tops his 2019 regular season total. Obviously, he had the postseason run as well. But 340 is a lot. And I don't know. Do you really care if he gets to 2,000 or not? If they like go one and done in the playoffs, I don't know. I guess I don't care about the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big numbers person either. Although I suppose it is an important milestone and an impressive one.
He is really good, and he deserves a lot of credit. And the fact that they are building that offense primarily around a running back in 2020, that's something to be sort of praised. Matthew Stafford did play in this one despite the torn cartilage in his ribs, and played well and sort of had them hanging around for a while until the defense gave up all those points. And that's Matthew Stafford's life at this point, I guess.
That's a great point, Gary. That is kind of what his career has been. It's, you know, playing tough through injuries and through challenging circumstances around him,
and then being like, hey, I put up almost 30 points, like, oh nope, we gave up 46,
right?
Cowboys 49ers, this is the last Sunday game, and we'll quick hit the Saturday games, which you've probably already heard plenty about. But yeah, Cowboys and 49ers here. 49ers roll up 458 yards of offense, but turn it over four times. They lose a couple of fumbles here, and I don't know, it's just Nick Mullins has had a nice run here for the 49ers, but he is dangerously turnover prone in a lot of these games.
Yeah, it's really shown up in just brutal ways for the 49ers. And there was some early promise. I mean, remember when there was conversation, hey, maybe they should stick with Mullins instead of Garoppolo. And the turnover woes have just really put the 49ers in some difficult positions. It happened the other week against Washington as well.
Tony Pollard in this one gets sort of a surprise start as Ezekiel Elliott ends up sitting this one out. He put up 132 scrimmage yards. Also had a game-clinching touchdown run on a second down when the Cowboys were trying to run the clock out on the other side of the, I should say, the more than 2 minute side before the 2 minute warning. I don't know if that's the other side or what people would consider that, the good side, the bad side. It wasn't a garbage time run, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make, and it sealed the game here. But the neatest part of this game, and I suppose nobody cares unless they were playing fantasy football, because it was just sort of funny to watch. Both teams scored completely meaningless touchdowns in the final 30 seconds. You had CeeDee Lamb do the he snagged the onside kick attempt and ran it back for a touchdown to sort of stretch the lead even further, and then Kendrick Bourne caught a Hail Mary on the last play of the game to make the game slightly closer. And I don't know, it probably was not as exciting as 41-33 suggests as a final score, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah, and it finished with a flourish.
There you go. And we will finish with a flourish with the Saturday games. We'll kind of quick hit these, though. I mean, look, Buffalo Bills are AFC East champs, and that hasn't happened since 1995, and that is a big deal. And they very much did it in style in Denver with Josh Allen just absolutely demolishing this Broncos defense that's been pretty good over the last couple of weeks. And the defense looked solid again after sort of a rocky first half of the season for them.
Yeah, and just the connection between him and Diggs, I just marvel at it every week. I mean, they are so in sync for two players that did not have an offseason together.
And in the late game here, the Packers were very sloppy. Aaron Rodgers was super bummed out about their performance, but they do hang on and beat the Panthers, kind of like they did last year around this time of year, where the Panthers went out there with Kyle Allen and almost stole one in Lambeau. But the Packers get the win, and that's what matters. And now their magic number is one. If they win one of their final two games, or if the Saints lose a game, the Packers clinch this top seed in the AFC.
I'm just glad we got to end the show, Gary, with the proper use of the magic number.
Although I said AFC and they're in the NFC, so I even butchered that. And also, we should mention Marty Herney is out in Carolina now. They have fired longtime general manager Marty Herney, who this is very rude to say, but I'd forgotten he was still the general manager because it feels like such a new regime there. And mm-hmm. I would have assumed that when Matt Rhule came in, they maybe made the change then. But it sounds like Matt Rhule is going to have his hand in helping select the new general manager. And that seems like it's, I don't know, it seems like that's kind of the way to go in this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little surprising they didn't do that last year, but they clearly had Matt Rhule, confidence in Matt Rhule to give him the contract that they did. So I think reading Tepper's statement about how important alignment is, it, the only surprise there is that they didn't do it last year, but they're doing it now. And I agree, Gary. I mean, it should be an alliance between the head coach and general manager. It's the only way to have success.
That is how we finish with a flourish. Jenny, you'll have the Weak Side podcast on its own feed coming on Tuesday. You and Connor, and I hope you have a great holiday here. And we'll talk to you on Monday.
You too, Gary.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Brentis and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. And Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the Weak Side Podcast and the Albert Breer Show. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.